Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing reading from the ninth canto, chapter 21 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And today's text, we're starting at 8. I think I have to read up to 11. I think 10 may have a short purport, so I'll read that and then we'll responsibly do 11. So, Yate Shudritamanyo God Ati Tikshabir Avritaha Rajan Me Diyatam Annam Saganaya Pabukshate. When the Sudra went away, another guest arrived, surrounded by dogs, and said, quote, O king, I and my company of dogs are very hungry. Please give us something to eat. Text 9. Sa adrishtya vashishtang yad bahu mana puraskritam tachadattva namaschakre sabhyaksa pataye vibhu. With great respect, King Runtideva offered the balance of the food to the dogs and the master of the dogs who had come as guests. The king offered them all respects and obeisances. Text 10. Paniyama tamuchesham tachchaika paritarpanam pasyatak pulkaso bhyagad apodeya shubhayame. Thereafter, only the drinking water remained, and there was only enough to satisfy one person. But when the king was just about to drink it, a chandala appeared and said, quote, O king, although I am low-born, kindly give me some drinking water. Text 11. Tasyatam karanang vacham nishamya vipulashramam kripaya brishyasantapta idam aham ritang vachaha. Aggrieved at hearing the pitiable words of the poor, fatigued chandala, Maharaj Runtideva spoke the following nectarian words. And there's a short purport here. I'll read that, then we'll do the next one responsibly. Purport. Maharaj Runtideva's words were like amrita, or nectar, and therefore, aside from rendering bodily service to an aggrieved person by his words alone, the king could save the life of anyone who might hear him. So this one we'll do responsibly. Text 12. Okay. Nakamaye hangatim ishvarat param ashtardhi yuktam apunar bhavangva arting prapadye kila deha bhajam antaksito yena vantya dukha. Nakamaye hangatim ishvarat param ashtardhi yuktam apunar bhavangva arting prapadye kila deha bhajam antaksito yena vavantya dukkha. Nakamaye hangatim ishvarat param ashtardhi yuktam apunar bhavangva arting prapadye kila deha bhajam antaksito yena bhavantya dukkha. Please chant. Kamaye hangatim ishvarat param ashtardhi yuktam apunar bhavamva arting prapadye kila deha bhaja antasito yena mavantadukha. kamehaṁ gatimishvarat param aṣṭādi yuktam apunar bhavam bha arting prapadye kila deha bhajan antak sitayena vavanchidukha Sarat param Ashtardhi yuktam apunar bhavangva Arting prapadye kila deha bhajan Antakstito yena Vaishnavis Nakamehaṁ gatim ishvarat param Ashtardhi yuktam apunar bhavangva Arting prapadye kila deha bhajam Antakstito yena bhavancha dukkha Nakamehaṁ gatim ishvarat param Ashtardhi yuktam apunar bhavangva Arting prapadye kila deha bhajam Antakstito yena bhavancha dukkha Okay, synonyms, na, not, kamaye, desire, aham, I, gatim, destination, ishvarat, from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, param, great, ashtaridhi yuktam, composed of the eight kinds of mystic perfection. Apunak bhavam, cessation of repeated birth, liberation, salvation. Va, either. Artim, sufferings. Prapadye, I accept. Akhila deha bhajam, of all living entities. Antakstitaha, staying among them. Yena, by which, bhavanti, they become, adukaha, without distress. Translation. I do not pray to the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the eight perfections of mystic yoga, nor for salvation from repeated birth and death. I want only to stay among all the living entities and suffer all distresses on their behalf, so that they may be freed from suffering. Please repeat. I do not pray to the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the eight perfections of mystic yoga, nor for salvation from repeated birth and death. I want only to stay among all the living entities and suffer all distresses on their behalf, so that they may be freed from suffering. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Vasudev Dutta made a similar statement to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, requesting the Lord to liberate all living entities in his presence. Vasudeva Dutta submitted that if they were unfit to be liberated, he himself would take all their sinful reactions and suffer personally so that the Lord might deliver them. A Vaishnava is therefore described as being paradukha dukhi, very much aggrieved by the sufferings of others. As such, a Vaishnava engages in activities for the real welfare of human society. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Pasya Chadeshtarni Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtang Stapitang Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Tapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavangsha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvatam Tangsajivam Sadvaitam Sabadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivisha Kanvatangsha Hey Krishna Karana Sindhu Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindabaneshwari Rishavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priya Vancha Kopaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Dityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So when we heard the chapter summary a few days ago, Surah's class, we read, it seems like, wow, how are we going to get through this chapter? It's just a list of names after names after names of kings and their descendants. First of all, you wonder, how did Shukadeva Goswami remember all these names? Just goes to show you, Shrutidhar means everything that he heard from Vyasadeva, he remembered exactly. Didn't forget anything, so very rare to find such a personality nowadays, but at least we can keep going back to the books. And so again, there's this list of names, name after name after name. You wonder, maybe it's just a good section for prospective parents to refer to. You can figure out a name for your son. But then you say, what about daughters? They're mostly male names here. I mean, are we going to find... Well, no. The story kind of started out with Bharata, and his parents were Dushmanta, the father, and the mother, Shakuntala. So there are women in there. You don't have offspring without women. Generally not. We know on the higher levels they can generate, like Lord Brahma has his mental sons. And then this morning, Subhasa was reading about some of the descendants of Lord Brahma. He mentioned Swayambhuva Manu, and his wife's name is Shatarupa. And they had five offspring, two sons and three daughters. The two sons are? No, the two sons of Swayambhuva Manu and Shatarupa. Priyavrata and Tanapada, of course. And then the three daughters, very easy to remember. In order, eldest first. Akuti, Devahuti, second, and Prasuti, third. So there are lots of female names there. You just have to check it out. and on and on and on. Descendants, descendants. But it's not just, again, who married whom and who gave birth to whom. That would just be mundane. Like once Prabhupada went on a program in India with his disciples. And the big house, wealthy person. And the owner of the house, the head of the family, was introducing, here's my daughter, here's my son, here's my daughter-in-law, here's my son-in-law, here's this one, that one, very proudly. And so when he wasn't looking at one point, Prabhupada turned to the disciples and said, here's my sex life. So the Bhagavatam is not like that. Not just, giving a list of people's, progeny that they generated by their sex life. No. These are all important personalities, but some are more important than others. So here we've come to Rantidev. And Rantidev is, as we are hearing today, an exceptional. So we heard previously that, as Prabhupada said in one purport, he was not an ordinary devotee. He was an exceptional devotee, and therefore Krishna empowered him with special devotional service. So this, not that we should strive to be extraordinary, but in a sense, it's our birthright. Every one of us is, by nature, a pure servant of Krishna. And we've, by our own volition, turned away and allowed ourselves to become covered over by the modes of nature. And we are constantly fighting with the six enemies of the conditioned soul. Kam, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Matsarya, Mada. Those are the six enemies. Lust, anger, greed, envy, illusion, and madness. So every day we get into the ring, as soon as you get out of bed, even before we get out of bed, in dreams we're even fighting with these things. But certainly when we wake up, and as long as we stay awake all day, we're fighting with different degrees of these six enemies. So, and we should be conscious of that. Krishna consciousness begins with becoming conscious. So if we're conscious of where we are, what we're up against, then we can take precautions. Just like if you move to Seattle, take an umbrella. It's guaranteed it's going to rain. that region, Washington State, probably gets more rain per annum than any other part of the country. So if you go to Washington State, take an umbrella, be prepared. So similarly, if we understand where we are, who we are, what we're up against, we can take proper precautions. But it is possible to come back to this platform, because again, this is the normal platform actually. The normal consciousness of a pure devotee is this: to be aggrieved, to feel the miseries of others, and therefore to want to do something about it. We know that famous pastime in Mayapur, the main temple there had just been completed. This is like 74, I think, 75. And Prabhupada said, one of the railings looking over Mayapur, those of you who have been there know, and back in those days at least, that was the only building, so you could see practically everything. And then a long building came up and other buildings came up. So Prabhupada was looking out and he saw there was a pile of garbage where, you know, the devotees eat from their leaf plates, banana leaf plates, they throw them away. And some children were literally fighting with dogs to get the scraps of leftover prasadam. And Prabhupada started crying. This is devotee. Devotee feels the pain of others. And that's when he said that from all of our temples all around the world, no one within 10-mile radius should go hungry. So we should be willing to feed people. We're known as the kitchen religion. We Prabhupada instituted that. And that, from that, Food for Life was born. And I remember when I first went there in 76, after devotees would take prasadam, then there would be prasadam distribution to, you know, whoever had come from the surrounding villages. So they would line them up and then have the leaf plates, and then we would take turns serving, mostly khichdi and a little sweet or something like that. But for those people, it was a lot to get one solid hot meal every day. It's a lot. To this day, you know, even here in America, people are starving. And those who are not starving, they're starving nutritionally, because when they have money, they discriminate what to eat and what not to eat. And generally, they eat things that are not good for them. And they avoid things that are good for them. As we know, there's 6 different tastes we should get every day. I've mentioned many times. The first 3 are easy to remember because they all start with S: sweet, salty, sour. And then the other 3? Pungent, astringent, and bitter. Most people don't like bitter. But it's known, if you don't voluntarily take bitter in your diet, then you will have to take bitter medicine, because your body will go out of balance. Bitter exists for a reason. All those tastes exist for a reason, but bitter is specifically there to keep things in balance. And if you don't voluntarily eat bitter foods, like bitter melon and other bitter things, then your body will definitely go out of balance. And depending on which of the 3 doshas is prominent, you're going to have different symptoms. If you're like me, mostly vata, then the air goes out of balance. And Prabhupada states right in the Bhagavatam, he writes that illnesses are based on this imbalance, especially of air, and a particular imbalance of air creates madness. If your air goes too much out of balance, then you can't control your mind, you become crazy. So it's very important to keep the doshas in balance, to keep your body in balance by eating, again, these 6 different types of tastes every single day. Voluntarily eat something bitter every day, and then you won't have to take bitter medicine. So it's the same thing when we come to the spiritual realm. The seemingly bitter medicine for the age of Kali Yuga is the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. At first it seems bitter. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, you just want to get over it, and you close your eyes and you, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. But as Rupa Goswami says, Nama Krishna Charitari Sitapta Vidya Pitopa Tapta Rasana Sin Rojaka Anu Kintarad Anudanam Kalushai Vajusa Kin Swavikramad Bhavati Tad Gada Mula Tad Gada Mula Manchi, right? Yeah. The Mula, the root, is ignorance, and that root becomes cut off when we chant voluntarily, take the bitter medicine of chanting every single day. That root of ignorance that's keeping us ensconced in this material world is gradually hacked away. And lo and behold, the day comes when we start tasting the name to be sweet. And we literally can't stop chanting. If we're not chanting japa, we're chanting kirtan, bhajan, we're always chanting. 24/7/365. This is the goal. Generally, the taste comes first in kirtan. I remember in Potomac, they used to have, I don't know if they still have, there was a a quote from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur on the wall there, that in the beginning, they will not have taste for chanting japa. But if they will surrender to the kirtan, then the taste of japa will come after that. So generally, it's easier to surrender to kirtan. Even new people, you see, they come through the door, they get caught up with the devotees chanting, they run around, they chant Hare Krishna. So it's very easy to get a taste for chanting in kirtan. But we need to cultivate it. Don't just let it be once in a while. Because sometimes we become a little jaded. You know, if we've been here a long time and we hang back, we can't be bothered running around with the devotees jumping up at it. No. We should surrender to that. To the best of our ability, as much as your body will allow you, jump up and down, run around, run back and forth. This is where you really get the taste for chanting Hare Krishna. Because the congregational chanting of the holy name is the Yuga Dharma. It's not necessarily japa. Japa is important. It's required. But the Yuga Dharma is the congregational chanting of the holy name. So when we come together as a group, we should surrender to that. That jumping up and down, that running back and forth. Remember when they moved us from New York to here, to LA. You know, previously we had ISKCON Press and I was serving there. And then they made the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust and in 75 they moved us all out here to LA. And I remember right in this room, we were jumping so high, it seemed like we were floating. Because we were all young men, you know, 22, 23. And some of us are probably still floating on substances that we... but whatever it was, we were jumping so high. I remember, it seemed like we wouldn't come down. We would all jump high and look in each other's eyes and come back down and again jump high. And this is required. And of course, we had some really, really potent kirtan leaders back then, Agni Dev and Sachinanda, Sri Sachi. So many really, really good kirtan leaders, Bharadwaj Prabhu. And so, you know, we would come for them, eagerly for Mangal Arati, for greeting, for the evening program, just looking forward to the kirtans, because the kirtans really sustain us. Japa, again, you know, it takes a while to get a taste and really get into hearing Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Because hearing is the most important. Some devotees, if they're actually conscious in hearing each syllable, that's fine. You can go as fast as you can. Other devotees, it seems like their whole career, I know devotees have been chanting for 30, 40 years, and they still chant very slowly. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. It may probably take them 4 or 5 hours to chant their rounds, but that's the speed that they go on, and Krishna bless. It's not a hackneyed thing that everybody has to have the same approach. Whatever works for you. But obviously everyone has to chant 16 rounds, follow the four regular principles, and hear from the Srimad Bhagavatam. So here we're hearing about the heart of a pure devotee today, Rantideva. He's aggrieved at the suffering of others. It's a little bit strange though that here he's a king, he's referred to as King Rantideva, that somebody didn't just run to the kitchen and make more prasadam. You know? It's a little strange. Somebody comes while the king is about to eat and he gives him half his prasadam and then half till he has nothing left but water and then that goes. Seems a little strange. Why not? At least water everybody has in the Vedic culture because the tendency was to live close to a body of water, either a lake or a river, and to dig wells. And you know, so it seems at least the poorest person could have access to water. Prabhupada mentions that many times. He said even today in India, even the poorest person can take bath 3 times. He said he was shocked when he moved to New York and it was a big deal to take bath. Either they didn't have access to a bathroom or they did, but they didn't care. They only bathed once a week. So Prabhupada was shocked. He said even the poorest man in India will bathe 3 times a day. So it seems a little strange that Rantideva, you know, that he's a king, but nobody's running to the kitchen to make another, you know, batch of sabji and puri or whatever. So anyway, I can't understand that part. Maybe there's some explanation in Sapurana somewhere. But he's aggrieved at the pain of others. So he couldn't take that. So he would give everything away to make sure that others were taken care of. And obviously not just on the physical platform, but the spiritual platform. It was the duty of the kings to see not only that the citizens had everything they needed materially, but above that, spiritually, that they made spiritual progress. Because understanding the value of the human form of life, it is special, we have to admit. Every single day, so many ants are dying. Is anybody here losing sleep over that? Every single day, so many birds are dying. Anybody losing sleep over that? No, but the higher you go up the chain, every single day, so many dogs are euthanized. Now you start to take notice. Oh, my God, why should they kill them? They should be adopted. We don't care so much about the ants and the crickets and the mosquitoes and the birds too much, but then you get to dogs. Why? Because they're a higher conscious form of life, and we interact with them and usually in a loving way. So we care. Oh, why should the dogs be killed? Let them all be adopted, etc. And then you get to whales, and then you get to the cows. Of course, we're concerned. A lot of people are not concerned. They're confused. They're more concerned about the dogs than the cows. Yesterday, it was in the news. A cow escaped from a slaughterhouse in New York. It was running around the street. So the cops came and captured it. And immediately, it seems, some guy from a shelter in New Jersey came and adopted the cow and said, this cow will live a long life. But what about all the other cows that were still there in the slaughterhouse? You see? Big news that one cow is adopted and allowed to live forever, but the other cows, nobody cares. So, in essence, we're kind of like that cow. All human beings, unfortunately, are lined up for slaughter. Everybody is destined to die. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, for every living being that's taken birth, death is certain. But out of those millions and billions of living entities in human form that are going to die without making any spiritual progress, very few take the step to escape the slaughterhouse. So that's what the Krishna Consciousness Movement is all about. We're giving all of those human beings who are lined up to be slaughtered a ticket out of the slaughterhouse. And not that we've come up with those tickets. See, this is what keeps us humble. We have been given that ticket by Srila Prabhupada, and now he said, go out, make copies of those tickets, and give them to others. That's what preaching is all about. Don't ever think of yourself as a preacher. And Prabhupada himself said that. When one disciple said, Srila Prabhupada, when I'm preaching, and Prabhupada cut him off, he said, what do you mean you're preaching? I'm preaching, and you're helping me. So as long as we keep that humble mentality, which is actually factual, who here wrote Bhagavad Gita as it is? Or Srimad Bhagavatam as it is, or Chaitanya Charitamrita. And no, Srila Prabhupada wrote it. So when we go out and distribute Bhagavad Gita as it is, what do we have to be proud of? It's not our book. We're distributing Srila Prabhupada's book. We're helping him. We're liberating Lakshmi, which is good for that person. When they give Lakshmi the Krishna Consciousness Movement, they immediately make spiritual advancement. Even if they don't give, if they just appreciate, Prabhupada said. One time he said, even if people just appreciate that these Hare Krishna people are nice, they have a right to do what they're doing, Prabhupada said they make spiritual advancement just by appreciating. So by going out and helping Srila Prabhupada's preaching mission, we're giving people a chance to at least appreciate this spiritual movement. Jayadwaita Maharaj tells a story that he was going through JFK, and there was some woman there, and he was assisting him with something, and she said out of the blue, she said, you know, I really like you people. Yeah, you know, I really like you people. You know how New Yorkers are, they're pretty blunt. I really like you people because you really are what you pretend to be. You really are what you pretend to be. In other words, people may think it's some kind of a show, the way we dress and the tealak and everything, but when they get to know us, they see, you people really are what you pretend to be. In other words, you're trying to be spiritual, and I appreciate that. So she made advancement just by appreciating. So let us continue to go out. And Srila Prabhupada is on the same level as Rantidev. He's feeling the pain of all the living entities, and therefore he started this movement to give them all the tickets back to Godhead. And we're now the ticket passers out. We go out every day to pass out these tickets back to home, back to Godhead. And we don't take any credit. It's Srila Prabhupada's energy. It's Srila Prabhupada's work. All we have to do is hand out the tickets. Hare Krishna. We can stop here. Any questions? Any comments? Yes, Bhakta Snorri.
Thank you for such a very nice class. My question was pertaining to, you said we should feed, nobody should go hungry. This is Prabhupada says this, within 10-mile radius. Mm-hmm. And so I understand that we're also a preaching movement. So therefore, there are certain standards that we have to follow, you know, to kind of keep it like a place where people feel comfortable to come. So how would you suggest that we could do both feed the homeless that live within 10 miles and at the same time keep this a place of life.
Yeah, that's what the Food for Life is meant for. Sometimes we become a little sentimental about this because Krishna consciousness is meant for the masses and for class also. Prabhupada himself also stated that. He told Satsuru Maharaj, if you keep expanding unlimitedly amongst the common people, everything will fall apart. You have to become expert at preaching to the higher classes also, to the college students and like that. Because Krishna consciousness is meant for everyone, not just for the guy on the street who can't, you know, find something to eat. For everyone. So we have to do it intelligently. We have to maintain nice centers where the higher class people want to come. And, I'll give you an example. I was in San Diego when David Akinanda was just still in high school. I don't know if you know who he is, but anyway. He had gotten a Bhagavad Gita from a bookstore and he wanted to come. His father brought him to the Sunday feast. And I was there when he arrived and father said, are you sure that you want to go? He said, yeah. Went in and never looked back. Became a devotee while he was still in high school and then got initiated like that. Now, the next time he came, he brought his mother because his parents were separated. Very high class woman. She walked through the door, took one look at the deities, this is Radha Giridhari in San Diego, and said, oh my God, they're so beautiful. So if we were running some run-down establishment, she probably would have turned and walked away. So we have to maintain beautiful temples, nice gardens, you know, nicely run places where class people can come and feel at home and want to keep coming. And for those who are not quite ready, in other words, the doors are open to the public, but you still have to discriminate. Not that because the doors are open, anybody can come in any state, and sometimes devotees have such sentiment. That doesn't work. I was in San Diego again, this was like early 90s, Sunday feast, and some guy came in off the street, stinking to high heaven to start with. Nobody should have let him in, but anyway, they let him in. Then he sits down in the line to be fed and wearing short shorts and no underwear. Everything is exposed. So I tapped him. I said, I'm sorry, you have to go. And I took him out. And some devotees got mad at me. You should be compassionate. Yeah. You know, come on, be smart. You can't have one person blow 200 people away so they can't stay and comfortably take the feast. What have you accomplished? By allowing one stinky guy exposing himself to stay in the temple room, and blow away 200 other people who could have, you know, stayed and become devotees. It's not smart. So you have to use your intelligence. That's why Krishna gives us intelligence. Somebody like that, they're not ready to come into the temple room. Out of compassion, you may give them a plate and send them on their way, but don't allow them to dissuade others from coming. So compassion has to be ruled by intelligence. Okay? Okay, one more. We're running out of time.
Hare Krishna.
Hare.
So in Srila Prabhupada's purport, he was saying that a devotee...
I think you need to turn it on. Is it on? Okay.
Yeah. A devotee is a paradukaduki, where he feels the suffering of others, and he's happy when he sees other people happy. So in this pastime of Ranti Dev,
don't mix the two. Paradukaduki is just what it says. Feels the suffering of others.
Well, that's what Ranti Dev was doing. He saw that people were hungry and thirsty, so he gave them food and water. But what are we supposed to do if we see like animals suffering or insects suffering? Are we supposed to go out of our way to help their bodies, or how do we see that?
To the best of your ability, right here, Prabhupada was up in his quarters, and he called a servant and he said, "You see that bug? He has not moved in about 15 minutes. Do something." So Prabhupada is very conscious of everything, every bug in the room, every like that. So we should also be conscious. And if you can assist some living entity in whatever material form they have, sure, why not?
Should we go out of our way to do that?
What do you mean by going out of your way?
Like, for example, I was driving home the other day and I saw like a homeless dog. And I kind of felt sad for the thing. It was running around in the street, didn't know what to do. And I didn't do anything about it. So what should I do in that situation?
Well, you have to prioritize again. Use your intelligence. If you're on the way to something that's more important, do that. Just say Hare Krishna and go on. Just that Hare Krishna will affect that dog. Seriously, I was in Novorossiysk. 1995. So we went out on Harinam. Big Harinam. It was a very small temple. I don't know if they've grown since then. I haven't been back. But it was a very small temple. But they had about 20 devotees living in the temple and then others living outside. So we had a Harinam party of about 30, 40 devotees. Went to downtown Novorossiysk. And we're running around chanting Hare Krishna. And this dog just spontaneously started running around with us. Street dog. We were chanting Hare Krishna. And this dog was running around in a circle. And then one of the Matajis, she went over and picked him up by his front legs. So he was standing on his hind legs. And he was running around like that. So the chanting of Hare Krishna is so powerful. That street dog, you could have given him a piece of bread or whatever. But that dog made more advancement just from running into the, you know, who knows, he'd probably get a human form of life. Practically you will get a human form. It says once you start, you hear the chanting of Hare Krishna, you will get a chance to continue in the next life. And so even dogs benefit from coming in contact. Another story, I was in Yerevan, Armenia, and they had attacked the temple there, small temple they had, so they decided to buy a property and build a temple so they could be more secure. And they had a guard dog. It was a giant schnauzer. There's three types of schnauzer, the miniature ones, the standard, and the giant big dog, really big dog. And that dog was so smart. Anybody who was not a devotee, he would growl at them, and they wouldn't dare come near the gate. But even somebody like me, you'd never seen before, but dressed as a devotee, tilak, no problem. He would only eat prasadam, which means no meat, obviously. No meat, no fish, no eggs. He would only eat prasadam. Now, schnauzers are famous for being ratters, especially the small ones, but they all have a natural instinct to kill rats. So he would kill rats, but he wouldn't eat them. He would only eat prasadam. So even a dog that comes in contact with the Krishna consciousness movement will make rapid advancement. So if you can't, if you're on your way to do something more important, then just say Hare Krishna. That dog will make rapid advancement. Okay, Granth Sarat Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivedanta ki jai.